evening. Good evening.
No pressure.
Hello. Good evening. We'll give everyone a chance to settle in. Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Studies Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I've asked Chris to come up and tell us our joke for the evening.
Hey guys, how do you know it's a alcoholic couple's second date? Moving trucks pulling up out front.
Thank you for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that might make noise or will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everyone ready? See you on the inside. Silence followed by the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, we have it on the banner just to the right of the stage. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find relief through me. There is a solution. From the Big Book, page 17, the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Andre to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of this of the 12 steps is to have one, so it is kind of important to know what one is.
Andre, recovered alcoholic. Spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true for us, it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have, nevertheless, concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Thank you, Andre. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane meeting mode or just turn them off. Peter is beginning his step series tonight. This is actually his fifth consecutive year doing a step series here at Alcoholics and God. I'm personally very excited. I've always loved what Peter has to say. He's a great reminder that our spiritual growth never ends in this program. In his words, you know, how free do you want to get? That's about as good as my Bensonhurst Brooklyn accent is going to get, Peter. Please help me welcome him up.
My name is Peter, I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank the group for having me back. Mike informed me earlier that this group is actually in its fifth year of keeping the doors open and staying in business. And so I think we ought to give it up for everyone who's crossed the threshold and kept the doors open and carrying a message for the great work they've done. Yeah. There are, if you allow me some latitude, there are some groups out there who carry the message and some groups out there who continue to mess. And this group does the former and takes a lot of heat for it from time to time. But where would we go to hear a good message from many of the other speakers who come in here and a lot of the group members who are all lathered up with the work and experiencing not only the Big Book, but where the Big Book takes us to, and that's to a God of our own understanding, the importance of carrying the message. And I'll just a quick story. There's a book called The Soul of Sponsorship by Father Dowling, and he tells a story in this book about his first encounter with Bill Wilson. And Bill describes it as a cold, I believe, November night. Bill was living in a clubhouse. Bill was sober 5 years and flat broke and hitting untreated alcoholism and some depression. And there were members in AA thought Bill was drinking, taking a couple of nips here and there. So the word on the street was Bill was drunk again. And he was flat out. And imagine being the founder or the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous with 5 years sober and you're living in a local clubhouse in the back. And your wife is working, trying to make ends meet, and your clothes are hung up on a nail in a wall, and wooden crates for shelves, and not knowing where your next buck is going to come from. And you're the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the caretaker came up and tells Bill, there's someone here to see you. And paraphrasing this, Bill was pretty much like, I'm not doing it. I can't hear one more drunk. I don't want to hear one more inventory. I just don't want to deal with it. I don't want to see another drunk. And God got a hold of Bill, and he said, send him up, having no idea who was walking up the steps. And in walks Father Dowling. And they began to talk, and Father Dowling was there to see Bill about another matter, some of the practices in AA, and was very curious. And as they began to speak, Bill began to talk more and more. And what Bill describes is pretty much a confession to Father Dowling, or what we like to call a fifth step. And his eyes lit Bill up, and Bill flipped. Bill turned. Bill had a shift on this one encounter with Father Dowling and got traction all over again. And here we are tonight. And I keep thinking, what if Bill didn't take the phone call? What if Bill didn't say, send him up? What if we don't take the phone call? What if we don't take on another drunk? What if we don't answer the phone, or we keep the doors closed because we're busy with our activities? Because sometimes life gets busy, and sometimes the phone call could feel like an inconvenience, and that drunk is not right now. I can't hear another inventory. But Bill did it at a bottom in recovery, and we get to continue to keep the light on and do this walk. And I need to always remember that, because there's times where I'm really tired and I can't hear one more inventory and I don't want to take that sponsee on, but you always say, okay, come on in. What I've gotten is a little bit more limited in how much latitude I give the sponsee, but my door's always open. And that is the great thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, because what I've learned, if my recovery isn't the most important thing in my life, I can't have it. And if it's not the most important thing in my life, I cannot keep it. It has to be number one, above everything, above relationships. The only thing that's going to surpass that is God. And it's because of recovery that I get a God, and because of God, I keep recovery. So I'm very grateful, not only to this group, but all the members who walk before me and pass this message on to me for fun and for free. And so that's my job. And I often joke that Mary and I, when we're home, sometimes our apartment sounds like, it looks like a phone room. I mean, it's phone call after phone call, sponsee after sponsee, and invitations and things like this. But we need to fight to get time to spend together. But the flip side of that is the phone isn't ringing, or God forbid, we're drunk and there is no life. So I'll take that all day long, as exhausted as I am. I mean, I was in Connecticut last night. I got into Florida just a few hours ago, held up with bad weather, 3 hours sitting there waiting to board, knowing I got this thing to do tonight, get home, eat lunch, take a 16-second nap, up, and here I am. And trying to appear to be like I'm alert, and I'm not. So June 23rd, 1988 was my separation from alcohol. And, by the grace of God, I'm still here. And this loving God has given me the endurance to still be here. And we just had a wonderful conference over the weekend. And I got to participate in that and celebrate in that as well. Not only my 30th year, but celebrate in the fellowship of the Spirit and the Spirit we found in the fellowship. You know, people coming together with all the hiccups that were going on and put this thing on. And what really was a little extra a piece for me was having my sponsor for 3 days here, 3.5 days, and having him and his lovely wife, Marie, present and getting some one-on-one time with my teacher. So it's been completely overwhelming. And, this is it's always been my favorite time of year. When I was up north, it was the beginning of summer. I have a sober birthday. I have a belly button birthday coming up. And my favorite, believe it or not, sporting event of the year happens in a few weeks, the baseball All-Star game. And it's like this 3 or 4 week stretch of, for me, it's like being a kid in a candy store. I'm sober another year. I'm alive to see another birthday. I watch the baseball All-Star game. It's the summer. Well, down here, it's always summer. But when you're up north, it's like summer's here and school's out. And it's a blast. Being sober, Zach asked me before How's it feel to be 30 years sober? And, you know, it's an easy answer. You're grateful every year, but for some reason, this was completely overwhelming. I think between my sponsor being here, my dad calling and getting very emotional on the phone with me, and this conference that we had, it's been overwhelming for me, a good overwhelming. It's almost surreal that I'm still here and passionate about Alcoholics Anonymous. Excited about Alcoholics Anonymous, looking forward to praying and seeking my God and getting right with God, being a member in good standing with my church. And I still, after all these years, as I did Monday night after the weekend, call my sponsor at 7. He picked up the phone. I had my big book. I had my inventory in front of me and my Bible next to that. And it isn't that I'm special or better AA. It's just I have been disciplined to a spiritual life. I can't recall the last time I called a sponsor and gave him some sprinkling of my day and got on with, you know, I'll see you next week. It's just not like that for me. And sometimes when guys call me like that, I realize that maybe their recovery just isn't that important. It's one of those to 10,000 things they need to do today. It's not the most important thing to do. So I chop wood and carry water, and grateful to be here. And I have no idea where God's going to take us, but we'll see. June 23rd, 1988 was my separation from alcohol. I had no plans of landing in Alcoholics Anonymous when God separated me. And God actually, literally, not figuratively, separated me from booze and other substances, because I tried quitting many times and wound up drunk and then in a detox. I tried stopping and the same result. And going into June 23rd, 1988, I despised everything and everyone, including God. It's really interesting where the main problem lies that creates the problem. It's the thing that keeps me taking back to a drink and back to old behavior. And this very same mind that's telling me it's going to fill the void is the very same mind that's digging the hole. And yet I return to it over and over and over again. And sometimes in Alcoholics Anonymous, when we're new, and sometimes when we're around here a while, we think by doing good deeds, I think I do good deeds and I'm going to win God's favor. I'm going to win over God. I can convince God to give me some sort of favor, forgetting that God doesn't operate that way. God's not a negotiator. And I look to seek control very often. Right? How often we seek control in prayer. That my prayers are about getting control to get a desired result. That God's going to listen to me more than he listens to you. And I seek control in prayer to prove to myself, quite frankly, that God exists and loves me if the results turn out the way I want. And so my relationship with God hinges on adversity and prosperity. And that's bondage. That's a lousy way to go. My life consists of really getting on my knees and, for the most part, a daily surrender and throwing myself at the mercy of God. Because it's only because with the power of God that I'm here tonight sober all day long. That I'll never transcend my alcoholism. And I see some cats get into trouble. They get a whole bunch of information but lack a transformation. They've been programmed by their program. And so they can recite the big book. It can tell you what Bill was doing on November 3rd, 1957, what he was having for lunch and the type of mood he was in. But God is absent from their life. And it's manifested in behaviors and in language. And quite frankly, what impresses me is a walk, not so much a talk. And so that's the great thing, that we can get to experience a complete transformation, a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism, not just not drinking. AA is not about not drinking. I did that in a detox when they separated me. I wasn't drinking. Recovery in AA is about experiencing the abundance of God and having a complete shift within us so we no longer look or sound or be like the person who walked in the door. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. That's recovery. Don't drink and go to meetings. I'm drunk already just thinking about it. The bondage and the pain to hang in there. Don't drink and go to meetings. If I had the power not to drink, why am I coming to an AA meeting? I'd be on the beach now hanging out, getting drunk probably, right? My alcoholism doesn't come in a whiskey bottle. My alcoholism comes in here and manifests up here. And that's where I operate from. the great predator called the mind. And since June 23rd, 1988, I had no clue about any of this stuff. I just thought if I cannot drink for one day, I might be able to catch my breath. Because I'm not exaggerating, I was dying, literally dying of alcoholism. If I live to be 100, I'll never be as old as the day I got into Alcoholics Anonymous or even treatment in 1988. I was dying of alcoholism. I had been through 6 treatment centers on my way into my 7th. I learned about a little bit of this stuff. They showed me charts and graphs and treatment, and then you sit in groups and talk about your feelings and your issues. And back then, thank the good Lord, they didn't medicate. Nowadays in treatment, they medicate you for everything. My shoelace is broken. We got a pill for you. You know, you thank the insurance companies for that. That's another. But they didn't do that. You know, I remember back then, if you couldn't sleep, they said, you won't die from a lack of sleep. Eventually you fall asleep. Have a nice day. Now we got 400 pills. We give addicts and alcoholics medication that they're trying to come off of. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's different. Thank the good Lord, it's different. Thank God we're autonomous. Thank God we're self-governing. Thank God we're even independent of all outside stuff. And we need to protect that. We really need to protect that in order to survive. That's what I got when I got in here. But I couldn't see any of this yet. In fact, quite frankly, even in my 7 treatment center, I knew I was alcoholic. But I didn't know exactly what that meant. I just knew I can't stop drinking. I didn't get why I can't stay away from it. I knew once I started, I can't stop. But what keeps me going back to that which is killing me? In my first 6 treatment centers over a bunch of years, on my own power, I come up with 2 days of total sobriety. Continuing sobriety. 2 days. And that was after my 5th treatment center when they locked me up for 9 weeks in treatment. And it really felt like locked up because it was one of those treatment centers where on your side of the door, there's no doorknob. They got that big metal key. So once you're in, you're in. It's like this vacuum you go into this little world, and you can't see anyone. The glass is like this thick. Even the people who work there have a special key, or they got to punch in a code to get in. You're in. So you don't see the outside world. And after 5 treatment centers, I was discharged, and I wanted to drink, and I held on for 2 days. And that's the most amount of sobriety me, on my own power, can muster up. And with 30 years sober, me, on my own power, I'll do the same thing and then get drunk again. Because my alcoholism doesn't come in a bottle of whiskey. And for the little dope fiends out there, it doesn't come in a bag or a cooker or a pipe. That's a symptom of a greater problem. And some of the things we can get into is this. Well, I didn't drink, so I'm a winner. Well, maybe not. Let's take a vote. We want to know how good we're doing. Let's ask wifey poo and the husband and the kids and the people you work with, if you have a job, how spiritual are they? We'd stop that train in a minute. Don't go there. Don't ask them. Take my word. I'm great. You know? My alcoholism does not come in a bottle. It lives within me. And when you remove the stuff, the substance from me, you're stuck with me and my alcoholism. I said this many times. I'm more dangerous sober than drunk. When I'm drunk, I'm very predictable. You know what's going to happen to me. I'm going to have one drink and then I'm going to have the second drink because I'm an alcoholic. Because I have something called craving that my body demands the second drink. And then I have the third drink. And for some reason, the fourth drink is screaming louder than the first and second drink. And I'm off to the races. I'm drunk. And I got to keep getting drunk. And the idea of not being drunk is more frightening than trying to get a drink. And my mind screams, get another drink or get the first drink and get another drink or get the first drink over and over and over again. Regardless of what I left behind, the wreckage of my past, how bad I screwed things up, my mind says a drink will fix it. And there's no relationship with God. Now, I knew a little bit about that, not a whole bunch. The problem was once I get drunk and I continue to get drunk, I start to get weepy and I start to look at my life and the sad condition of my life and I'll cry. And before I pass out or after I pass out, I'll probably borrow money off you, which I don't intend on paying back, by the way. You know how we do that. Just spot me till next week. You're never seeing me again, right? And that's what an amends list is like this long when we get in here. I borrowed $20 from Joe 40 years ago. And that's what I do. But in the search of money, in the search of getting a drink and other non-conference approved dry goods, that's when I get vicious. Now, I'm not the tough guy on the street who beats people up. I'm not that guy. I mean, I got into fights and I did ugly things, but I get vicious. I steal from people who love me. I lie to people who love me. If you have $10 in your pocketbook or in your billfold and that's all you have and you need that for lunch, I'm stealing it. If you leave your jewelry around, your wedding band, I'm taking it. If you tell me this is a family heirloom, it's coming out the door with me. I will break into your house to do it. That's what I turn into in search of money to get a drink or other stuff. And I despise that guy. But he's not gone away. He's just gone asleep. Because if he went away, he can tell you I'm cured, and I'm not. What's really frightening is sober, that guy still breathes if I'm not careful, if I'm not spiritually fit. This whole thing hinges on my condition with God, my spiritual fitness with God. It's not about how many meetings I knock out or how well I know the Bible or the big book. That doesn't mean anything in the face of addiction. What does is my relationship with God. The whole thing hinges on this. And so I can come into Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't have a drink today and I'm a winner. And yet I'm cheating on the wife. I'm cheating on my taxes. I'm lying and manipulative. I am still the same person that came in here. I watch with new folks, and the elders watched it with me. There was a gentleman named Bob Bannister from Minnesota, and I had about maybe 6 months sober, and I was the same exact guy except not drinking. And they called me, they told me, go into his office, Bob wants to see you. I was living in a halfway house or a three-quarter house. And when Bob wanted to see you, you were in trouble. And I knew it. Bob was about 6'12" and his hands were as big as his podium. And I walked into his office and I sat down. He said, I didn't invite you in, wait outside. Then he called me and I sat down. He said, I didn't ask you to sit. It's going to be a long morning. And he began to read me the riot act. He screamed and dropped every F-bomb you can think of about the condition of me. And I wanted to kill him. I pushed right back. Because he was attacking my ego where my alcoholism lives. And then he says, now get out, and threw me out. And on the way back to the parking lot, I'm plotting this guy's death. I swear to God, I said, I'll kill him. I'll call my friends in New York, you know. And then the quiet whisper spoke to me. That godly voice that we have. That the crackhead in the crack house right now has, the dope fiend and the wino under a bridge has that same voice. And it speaks to us. And thank God I listen. And it went something like, you're doing it again. You're doing it again. It's the same old you, and you're going to blow this up again. And I don't want to die. And I knew he was right. I lived a certain way. We can live a certain way when we're out there. We speak a certain way, the street language. We dress a certain way. We associate with the same type of people, that kind of tribe. We have the same vengefulness, spitefulness, anger, contempt, all of it. Got to show well all the time. I got clothes on for the same clothes for 3 weeks. I'm about 60 pounds underweight, and I'm trying to be glossy and look good. Got to show well. Come into Alcoholics Anonymous, 30, 60, 90 days, 6 months, a year, and God forbid even longer than that, and I'm still looking to show well, but I speak the same. I still hang out with the same type of people. I still got the stuff in here that's churning, the contempt, the doubt, the skepticism, the hate, the jealousy, the envy, all of it. But I can't let you know that because I'm an AA now, so I put on my AA game face. How are you doing? Great. I'm absolutely wonderful. I'm Moses. I'm great. But when I sit down and the speaker's speaking, I'm not listening to the speaker. I'm thinking of all the stuff and all the people I got to get back at and all the things I got to do out there. And then I go home and it's even worse. And a drink would actually fix me right now. So what do? I go on a sex spree, a little sex spree. I'm on a fear spree. I'm on a gambling spree, on a money spree. I'm on an eating spree, whatever it is, just something. Go to the gym and I can't even do that healthy because I become an extremist with that. Now I'm taking steroids. Because 45-inch arms are not big enough. I got to walk around. How you doing? Good. I'm good. Wear shirt six sizes too small. Look at me. I'm huge. I'm great. I'm in a treatment center business, man. I see some of these cats come in. They're like 80 pounds underweight. They go to the gym for three workouts, and they're wearing their sister's shirt, and they're walking, look at me. I'm great. We spend half the time in praying, then in the gym, we'd be really good. You know. I was living in Minnesota when Bob Bannister called me into his office, and my dad had sent me some money. I'm trying to be hip, slick, and cool. I'm still dependent on my dad to send me money. Okay? And I bought black pants, a black turtleneck, and a black coat. And black boots. I look like Johnny Cash. I mean, it's ridiculous. And I'm actually thinking I'm making a statement. And Bob Bannister just ripped me apart. He's, what is this? Are you in the mafia? What is this? What are you trying to prove? And I'll clean it up. He says, you're the same exact guy. I still needed to be rehabilitated. Some of us have to be habilitated. But there has to be a change somewhere. And I can come to meetings, that same guy, choosing the same women, hanging out with the same people, and the same thought process, while I'm up there taking a one-year coin, telling you how great I'm doing. I have a sponsor in name only. The thing that drives me up a wall sometimes when I see guys doing these 12-step series, and they're sober double digits, and they have a sponsor in name only, and they're telling you how they sponsor, and that you need to get a sponsor, and their experiences with the big book. And the way it was brought up, you're not even a member. You're just gate crashing. Sponsorship is so vital here. And it isn't about, I'll tell you a little bit, and I'll tell you a little bit, I'll tell Paulie a little bit, and I got my answer. Because I pick and choose. I need to be accountable to one person, a sponsor. And when I have that sponsor, I take his or her direction. Even though I don't like it. That's being teachable. And somehow when I submit to that, I begin to get better. And when I don't, I don't. How free do we want to be? I go to Noshi with a thimble. I come home with a thimble full of water. How free do I want to be? I need to let go of control. In fact, it goes like this. My job is to not, watch this, not care for myself. My job is to not care for myself. Because every time I've cared for myself over the years, I wound up in treatment. I wound up homeless. I wound up broke. And it goes on and on and on. That's what I do when I care for myself. And when I care for myself, it means I'm more important than you. And page 63 says, it's less and less about me and more about you. God's job is to take care of me, and he'll do a great job with that. He's done a great job so far. I don't need to worry about caring for myself. God will show me how to go about my day. What I need to do as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I speak for myself, is seek God's will at all costs and go to any lengths to continue to seek God's will. And as our book says, carry the vision of his will into all my activities. Even though it's an inconvenience, I don't like it, I'm doing God's will. I'm committed to this power called God and nothing less than that great fact. When I live like that, when I'm aligned with God's will, when I'm practicing fidelity to God, somehow all the stuff that's going on, I navigate through it. A couple of bumps in the road, absolutely. You know, a couple of potholes here and there, a couple of heavy winds blow by, keep going. And what the carpenter said, we can wear the world like a loose garment. Without that, I'm navigating. I never navigated well. I always got drunk. I always got drunk. I'm an alcoholic. Step one says I will still get drunk. I'm not immune from that stuff. Intensive work with alcoholics will give me immunity a day at a time, but I haven't transcended that stuff. I get drunk, and I need to get that at a gut level, not at a head level, because my mind is fickle. I'm an alcoholic today, tomorrow I'm not so sure. I'm going to worship God today, tomorrow I got things to do. I'll catch up to God. Let me catch up to everything else in life, but let me get God first. Let me weep before my God. which allow me to weep before you freely. And something happens when I'm aligned with God's will. I speak when necessary. You ever notice how we talk when we cease to be at peace with our own thoughts? Got to talk. Got to keep going. Keep talking. Say something. Get drama. I don't have drama. Let's invent drama. Let's do something. And yet when I'm right in here, it's a different walk. It's a completely different walk. It's a completely different talk. I'm seeing and hearing things completely different. Because although I'm an alcoholic, what step one tells you I'm going to drink, something has shifted. Where my reliance and dependence is upon a bottle or external conditions, my reliance and dependence is upon God, period, that's it. And seeking His will. We get so clear that more often than not, we're able to discern what God's will is and what God's will isn't. That's a popular question when you do workshops. How do I know what God's will is? We will wake up enough to discern. And sometimes a simple answer, I know what God's will is not. Leave her alone. Go home. Okay, God's will. But she really needs a sponsor. Yeah. So 1988, I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wanted to be here. I knew nothing about the Big Book, nothing about the steps, even less about traditions or our humble legacy. I just knew that when I walked into a meeting called Alcoholics Anonymous, they were like-minded. You knew me. And I knew you. And I didn't have to... Many of us, if you identify, walk in with a lot of shame-based stuff. We're broken. I'm broken. I'm flawed. And a lot of that is shame for some of the things I thought and did and things that happened to me, just shame. Shame over my alcoholism for so long that I never got better. But when I came in here, you had the same thing, and you talked about it freely. It was the room full of broken toys, and I was another broken toy. I belonged here, and I wanted what you had to offer. I was terrified. But it was the one place I can get a reprieve for an hour. And I have an elder in AA who says it best, that he's most comfortable in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I totally identify with that. You know, if someone's having a Super Bowl party or birthday party, unless they're very close friends, I mean, I go out of respect, but I'm a little awkward. I'm not, you know, it's a little uncomfortable meeting people you don't know. And a lot of times at parties, it's elevator talk. How you doing? Hanging in. And me too. How the kids? Good. I'm not going to see you again. Leave me alone. You know, it's like that. It's very uncomfortable. But something happens when I walk into a meeting called Alcoholics Anonymous. We get each other. And back in 1988 in Minnesota, I knew I was in the right place. And when I would hear your stories, and you would speak freely, you were transparent from the podium, which to me shouted courage. Because my version of courage growing up in Brooklyn is, you don't tell anyone anything, that means you're tough. And really, that's just fear and weakness. I thought tough was the toughest guy on the block who could punch somebody out. Anybody could hit anybody. But the real tough, the real strength I found in here by expressing vulnerability and sharing brokenness. That takes courage, that takes strength, and that only comes from God and not no other place. How He gets to mold us and realign us. So I got a sponsor in Brooklyn, Tony N., my first sponsor. I had some folks in Minnesota helping me along. This guy Joe and this other guy Kip. But Tony was my first teacher. And boy, was he a teacher. And when I asked him to sponsor me, he didn't say absolutely. He gave me some things to do before he would sponsor me. Is you need to go home and read the first portion of the Big Book first. And he showed me a line in the Big Book that says, having read the first portion of this volume, are they ready to go through with the work? Something like that. And he said, that's what we're doing. I said, well, I don't know how to do this, but I'll try. I'm not a good reader. I was thinking of all these excuses. He just go home and do it. And 3 days later, I called him. He said, you think you're alcoholic and your life's unmanageable? Absolutely. You want help? I said, yeah. You want to go on any list to get help? I said, yeah. He said, now we'll begin. And what he did was he opened up the beginning of the Big Book. I read books, I look for the pictures and read the ending, and I'm done. We started from the beginning of the big book. And he showed me the first promise in the big book, which says recovered on the title page. That's what we're going for. And he broke down the circle and the triangle. I didn't know what circle. I saw the thing outside the meetings, circle and triangle. I have no clue what that means. I need to understand what that is. See, I can be just be programmed by a program and not understand what that means, what it is to be an AA member, where AA came from. What does that have to do with the steps? Everything. I need to know what the organization I belong to so I can be a better member. And he broke down the circle, pardon me, and the triangle for me. That I came into a fellowship, not a program. And we hear folks saying Joe's in a program, Mary's in a program, that's Frank, he's in a program. We know what they mean, but the language is incorrect. And the newcomer needs to know we're not in the program. We're in a fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. Some of us have tried to get on back in the day. The methadone program, that's a program. But we have a fellowship and a spirit within that fellowship. And something happens in the fellowship. It's called the program. Which many of the folks who say I'm in a program don't even have one. It's called the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. And in there is the path to get free. And why do we get free? It's not that I get through the steps to get to keep me from drinking. I do the steps to get to God who's keeping me sober all along. I just get to experience oneness with that God. In 1988, prior to 1980, if you talked about God, when the H&I folks would come into a meeting and start throwing the God word around, I shut down. It's going to be a cult. It's going to be church. I know it's going to be, I'm going to be Hare Krishna any minute. I know this is going to happen. In 1988, I welcomed the idea, even though I had some disease and discomfort around the G-O-D word. I just knew by watching you bear witness for me that this was the way out. I don't know how I'm going to get there, but I need to do what you're doing. Sometimes looking at the beauty of someone being transformed in Alcoholics Anonymous, listening to a speaker who speaks to your heart, wanting what they have can coexist with the reluctance to do what they've done. And I need to be in a place of willing to be made fundamentally different into something I don't even know what it's going to look like. When God gets the clay and chops and pushes and does what he does and molds, I don't have no business in that. I don't even know where God's going to take me, but it has to be better. It's going to be better than where I am right now. That's bottoming out. That this control of my way of holding on to things and wanting things my way has to be relinquished, but it's done involuntarily. It's come from being shattered or hitting bottom. I can't just willingly relinquish control, willingly say I'm done. That's not going to happen. I need to be shattered, run out of road, hit a wall, drop to my knees, and then it's taken from me. That's called a moment of clarity. That happened to me June 23rd, 1988. And so I learned what I was, little by slowly with this teacher. And it's interesting, every sponsor I had over the years had the same message, different deliveries. It all came out of the book. And if I'm teaching someone out of this book and leaving my opinions aside and just sharing my experience, I can never hurt a drunk because the book is flawless. So we look at mechanics about what an alcoholic is, which hopefully God will get me there. But what about when we're around here a little bit and we got the mechanics down? I can tell you threefold illness, two parts of the first step, first half, second half of the step, and just go through that separation from alcohol and what that means and what happens to me when I'm drinking and tell you how alcohol is broken down in my body and goes on and on and on. Great. But what about when I'm here 5 years, 3 years, 10 years? How do I get step one to meet me with a few years sober now? Does step one even apply? What's my current unmanageability? We have bedevilments in the big book, things that torment, frustrate, and harass me. I get to look at that. I get to read, a gauge where I'm at right now. What's my current unmanageability? Am I having money issues that I can't get a grip on that's been going on for a while? Do I having sex problems that I can't get away from the sprees? Am I riddled with fear all the time? I have trouble in personal relationships. I'm out of work, but I'm not looking for a job. I'm incredibly jealous. I mean, these things going on, I'm insecure all the time. We got this stuff going on. I'm not drinking. I can tell you what the first step is all about, the rudiments of step one. But if you look at my life right now, it's completely unmanageable. And I think step one doesn't apply to me, and it does. And my experience has been, if I'm around here a little while and I'm having unmanageability in my life, it's I have a God problem. And I can't really do 10, and I really can't grow in 11 because I have a God problem. I have a step one problem. I haven't gotten past that yet. That God's everything and I am nothing. Something the ego doesn't want to listen to. Okay. Over the years being sober, I've been out of work. I've been flat broke. I went through a divorce. I lost trust in God. I thought he just gave up on me when I got divorced. I buy a house. I remodel the house. I get the two cars. I do the vacation. I get the wardrobe for her, for me, get all the bells. Everything's looking good. And then she comes home with a boyfriend, says, "You're out," and he moves in. Takes all my money, takes the car, takes everything. She took everything. I went to the ATM machine that says insufficient funds. I said, "How'd I get here?" "Oh, God, me and you have a problem now. You're not so loving." And I lost trust with God. We broke up for a little while. And I'm praying like, "Are you listening to, do you see what's going on? Why are you sending me the trials of Job? I don't deserve this." Live life forward, understand the backward. Best thing, he intervened. He intervened. That poor woman's a full-blown alcoholic and cocaine addict. Because you need to get out of this. I'll take care of her. You need to get out of it. And he always cared for me. Couldn't see it then. What I've learned now through those things is no matter how dark it is, I know the undercurrent, God's got me because there's no gravity in God's world. But I was having that kind of stuff, that kind of unmanageability. I'm a member in good standing, thank the good Lord, with my church. I always prayed. For the most part, I always believe in my God. But rarely did I go to his house. I go to light two candles, not for a service during my time. I did this faithfully for years, but to go to a service, I'd critique everything, including the priest. That's unmanageability because I still have a little contempt, a little anger, a little distrust in my God's house. And through this work, I got back in his house, and how dark it is before the dawn and how blind I had been. So we get to look at some current unmanageability. We need to. And the best place for me to go to, it might be devilments on page 52. Having trouble in personal relationships. Am I? Where? Not even outwardly, but, you know, sitting on the couch in the head and I'm rolling off names. I got the Rolodex. I hate him. I hate him. I hate him. I hate him. Can't control my emotional nature. Prey to misery and depression. The external world owns me. You know? And when the external world owns me, I'm in bondage all over again. And I try to fix stuff out there so I feel whole in here. Trying to control things out there so I feel whole in here. And I accumulate more and more drama and more issues. Full of fear, can't be of real help to other people. Can't make a living. This is going on for some of us. While we're sponsoring a dozen people. But I won't look at it. I don't want to go in there. Because it just reminds you how broken I am. So you talk to me. Just get so close. Don't pry. And I'll get to you and I won't get so close. Well, come to me and shake hands. Hug. I love you. You love me. And out the door. Leave me alone. And I don't want to sponsor. Because he might pry. I'm living an untreated life in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I look at step one. My big book has 43 pages dedicated to step one. Think about this for a minute. 43 pages. We can include doctor's opinion, by the way, in this. But we'll say 43 pages all about step one. They didn't give it a paragraph. They didn't give it a couple of pages. They gave 43 pages to our first step. So a guy like me comes in here blocked from everything that after 43 pages, it might cut through and get my attention as to what I'm up against, a tsunami, and I have no power to stop it. My best intention is not to get drunk. I get drunk. No matter what the consequences lie before me, this is going to happen to you, Pete, and worse, I still get drunk. You're going to get arrested. I get drunk. Doctor says one more drink, you're going to die. I go get a second opinion. It goes on and on and on because I get drunk. And 23 to 43 talks about the predator, the thinking mind. 17 to 23 is all about the body. They smash home to a drunk like me, who's stubborn, who's thick-headed, who's egotistical, what I'm up against. And before I even move on to step two, if I have some doubts and skepticism about step one, no need to move on. I need to really get in here, concede to my innermost self what I suffer from. I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to drink and I'm going to die because our book says to drink is to die. The sex spree is my drink. The food spree is my drink. The gambling spree is my drink. A new flavor of the week, you know, different boyfriend, different girlfriend every 20 minutes, that's a drink. Shacking up, after shacking up, that's a drink. That's untreated alcoholism. I'm looking for that thing just to fix me for a little bit. And eventually I will trickle back to give me a double vodka because that stuff doesn't last. I'm alcoholic. I drink. My book tells them, my sponsor reminds me, I'm mentally ill. Ego doesn't want to hear that either. As an alcohol, I'm mentally ill. I just don't see things like other people. I don't hear things like other people. You can say, hey, Pete, nice blue jacket, and walk away. And I'll go, what the hell do you mean by that? Marion, is it too wrong color, too tight, too big? Maybe I look stupid. I'll go home and change. Hold a meeting, Mike. I'll be back in an hour. Put on a green jacket. But this is what I do. Because I just hear things differently. Another person, a civilian, will go, oh, thank you very much. I just got it. I like it. It's comfortable. Yeah, looks good. Move on. Me, I hate you till you clear this up with me. Think about some of the inventory we write at night. Most of it's about stuff we just imagined. Nice jacket. Walk away. I got to write about you tonight. You're laughing because you identify. I know that. I'll give you one of the favorite things I like to share is probably the only place, well, the only place that I know of on the globe that I can tell you the most terrible, nasty, awful, disgusting things I've done, and you say, here's my number, give me a call, right? Only in AA. So we'll look at step one, 43 pages, and it said we're a minute repulse over alcohol. There's a dash there that I always ran right by, didn't even pay attention to it, that our lives had become unmanageable. Got that, let's move on. But there's 43 pages that break that down. So I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm homeless, and I look like a homeless person in my detox phase. And I look like a homeless person in my first few weeks in treatment because I've diminished. I've gotten thin. I've gotten frail. I look old. I got bags under my eyes. I can't eat. I can't sleep. I'm a bundle of nerves. And the head is running 100 miles an hour. The only thing that's happened to me has been separated from the substance. And then a little time goes by. I get released from treatment. I come to AA meetings. I start to eat. I start to sleep. I get a little job. I put some clean clothes on. I'm bathing a couple of times a day. And I'm starting to look healthy. I look in the mirror, I don't look like that drunk anymore. And people are saying, kid, you're doing good, you look good, nice clothes, etc. It's good to be working, I'm sober, I'm working, I got some money, I'm saving some money. From outward appearances, my life looks manageable. From inwardly, it feels manageable. I have a home group, I go to meetings, etc. And what happens is I get stuck on the second half of the first step where it was unmanageable. A blind man could see how bad my life was. It was in the toilet. And now I get all these nice things happening to me. My life is no longer unmanageable. It's manageable. I work. I go to meetings. I share. I try to sound good. Got the AA relationship going on. Got a job. Got some money in my pocket. Got clean clothes on. I bathe and eat. My focus now is to keep that thing going so it looks manageable. Because it's not unmanageable like it looked before I got here. And now the external world owns me. I need to look good, sound good, feel good all the time. I start to worship my emotions. I start to worship applause. Got to have the light on me all the time. And no catch, 20 years sober, still doing that. What bondage. I get stuck on that. And that dash over there, that's horizontal, goes vertical. From this, it goes like this. I can't peek over and see the first half of the first step, which tells me I have no power, choice, control over the next drink, and I will get drunk. And that is the essence of unmanageability, that the time and place will come for a drunk like me where a drink has got my name on it and I get drunk regardless of what went on before. Nice job, nice relationship, nice car, nice home, nice kids, nice this, nice that, get drunk and blow it. That's the first half of the first step. Because I've been so focused in on sounding good, looking good, and acquiring things, so I appear to be manageable. I convince myself I'm manageable. And if you tell me I'm doing good, I must be doing good. So I'm seeking approval all the time. I won't speak truth because I'm seeking approval. How could I speak truth if I'm seeking approval? How could I lovingly confront the sponsee or a home group member or a coworker if I'm on a mission to get approval? Because if I confront you, we might argue that's no approval. I bottom out. What bondage? But that dash becomes vertical, and I can't peek over and see the first half of the first step, which tells me I'm powerless over alcohol. No power. I don't have power over anything. Think about that for a minute. We get power in AA, God's power, as he gives it to us. It's his power that keeps me away from a drink. Keeps me away from unspiritual behavior. Till it becomes part of our beingness. The spirit, if you will, wakes up. As the mind empties out, the spirit fills up. And the spirit is the one that's talking to us. It feels like we're thinking about doing good things. But it's actually the spirit that's talking to the soul. And we seek that which the soul loves. And it filters up and says, let me help the homeless. I take no credit for that. Powerless over alcohol, I have no power, which is interchangeable with no choice and no control. Now, I've been arrested more times than I care to admit. They always handcuff you behind your back. Unless you're a politician, they do it this way. They put it behind your back. I just broke a tradition. You can't move. And they usually make the cuffs really tight just to annoy you and remind you you're not going anywhere. Then you go to booking. Once you get booked, you are now property, we'll say, of the state. You can't go golfing on that day. You're not going home for dinner. You're waiting to see the judge. I want to get out, but I can't. I have no power. I have no choice, and I have no control. I am owned by the law right now. I'm owned by the state. I am their property. It owns me, and I only get out when they say go. I have no power, choice, and control over the first drink in my mind, which means while I'm sober, I'm relapsing if I'm not spiritually fit. While I'm sitting in a meeting, regardless of how long I'm sober, I could be in that relapse mode. It's one thing to claim spirituality. It's another thing to live it. I can talk spiritual things. It's another to live it. Once I claim spirituality, I've lost it. Once I claim I'm godly or I have God, I've just lost it. Woe to the man so possessed that he thinks he possesses God. And my mind takes me back to that which is killing me. What happens to us when we pick up? I need more. It's called craving. I went from obsession to craving. The thing about the obsession, it pretties up a junkyard. It's called euphoric recall. I'll say, well, the crack house really wasn't that bad. There were nice people in there. You know, that dumpster I was eating out of, at least it was only 2 days old. The food, it wasn't that bad. That hallway wasn't that bad. It's kind of cozy back there. And a drink really, really sounds good. That's what it does. And then I have no power, choice, control in my body. And off I go. And I just went over time. I apologize. I'm out of time. So I got peace.
Thank you, Peter. Please help me thank Peter one more time. We're going to have Heather come up and do our secretary's report.
Hi, my name is Heather, and I am your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I have asked Michelle to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, my name is Michelle. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we're not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship from Forward to the Second Edition Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% sobered at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I get a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone needing a sponsor? Please raise your hand. Can you please stand up? Let's get them back to God. This is the last meeting of the month. Can anyone that is celebrating a year or more stand in place and announce your name and the years that you're sober? We'll hold our applause until the end. Anyone celebrating in the month of June? Congratulations. Please join us Monday night's Big Book Study meeting where the book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30. Big Book Study starts at 7:15. We have CDs, mugs, large print Big Books, the Little Red Book, and Big Book Dictionaries for sale. Upcoming events are going to be found on aabrower.org through the Intergroup website. We have the Chapters to Recovery. It's going to be down in Miami. It's this weekend. It's a really amazing conference if you guys have never been to it. And then we have Chris Raymer. He's going to be coming into Florida, Jensen Beach, July 27th. I believe that's an updated date. It was incorrect. And then in August, we have the Florida State Convention. It takes an army to get that thing going. So if you want to do service or any of your sponsees want to do service, definitely get involved in that. Women in Recovery Conference is also going to be in August. Then we have the Jersey Shore Roundup. That's going to be in November. And... anything that you want to know more information about, you can find flyers in the back. We meet here every Thursday, starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. See you next week.
Thank you, Heather. We have tonight's session, as well as all other past speakers, online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Big Book study on Monday nights. It's on the third floor. Fellowship starts at 6:30 and the meeting begins at 7:15. Those who would like to thank the speaker, please line up down the center aisle, concluding our meeting. Please join me in a moment of silence followed by the Lord's Prayer. Who can bring us from shame to grace? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. See you on Monday. Godspeed.
Zan, 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 oh. when you're smiling. When you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you're laughing. When you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby, and I hope.
say